Welcome to the Conservative Thought Hour, where America always comes first.
I'm proud to be an American.
Each week, we bring you captivating guests who will speak on many topics of national interest. We are not interested in telling you what to think or how to think. We have faith that you can do that for yourself. Our interest is to bring you information to help you form your own opinions. As always, the views expressed by our guests are their own and are not necessarily shared by the host or the station you are listening to. Get ready for enlightenment with the Conservative Thought Hour.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
And now, here are your hosts, Carrie Black and Rick Stannard.
And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome to another hour of the Conservative Thought Hour. It's brought to you by World of Designs Venice, and we so appreciate you listening. We're here every Saturday from 9 a.m. until 10. Carrie Black, along with Rick Stannard, and our guest this morning is Emery McClendon. Emery is a member of the Project 21 National Advisory Council, a Tea Party organizer from Fort Wayne, Indiana, and the winner for Americans for Prosperity's 2010 Activist of the Year Award. Now, you might be wondering if you haven't heard, Project 21, a leading voice of Black conservatives for over 25 years. They're sponsored by the National Center for Public Policy Research. Its members have been quoted, interviewed, and published over 40,000 times since the program was created in 1992. And Emery McClendon joins us this morning. Rick, I am so excited to have him on. Good morning, Emery.
Good morning. I am so excited to be here and happy to be able to speak to your audience.
Emery, let me start off by asking you a little bit about yourself. How did you come to have a conservative mind? Was it taught to you from your parents, or did you grow into it later in life?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because a lot of people have asked that, and I did a story. And I put it on Facebook in a video format, and I also sent it to the Walkaway campaign about my life's journey into conservatism. Actually, I was born into a very conservative Democrat family. My mother was a precinct chairwoman for the Democrat Party during the time of Senator Birch Bayh, who was Evan Bayh's father. And she held very conservative values politically, she held very conservative values religiously, but not politically. So I began to question her because the two didn't match one another. And as I questioned those things, I began to get scorned, and I began to get have her ask me questions as to why I was asking these questions. And the more she asked and the more that I asked, the more it drove me into conservatism and into conservative values and closer to the values that the Republican Party had, because I saw a double standard in what I was being taught at home and taught at church. And also, from my mother holding, seeming to me to be two different sets of values. So I began to ask questions. And as I asked those questions, I began to become an outcast, not only with her, but with some of my other siblings and family members, until finally I decided to do a deep search into what I believed in and why I believed in those things. And then that drove me to solidifying conservative values and being able to stand up for what I believe in solidify that I wasn't going in the wrong direction.
Are you still at odds with your family, or are you at least speaking with them?
Well, it's getting better as far as being able to talk, but we don't talk politics because for the most part, they don't want to hear my side or my view. I do have a couple of relatives who will listen to me. They will read my articles and whatnot, but they don't like to discuss or talk about politics either. And they say that I'm bold in where I stand and that they enjoy what I do and everything, and they're proud of what I do, but they would rather stay clear because, you know, they don't want to be at odds with other members of the family and so forth. So it's still very touchy, but I stand my ground. I'm not ashamed of what I believe in. And I think that if they would take the time to do the research, they also would find that they would be at odds with how we were taught when we grew up and what principles and values are better for each of us as individuals and for us as a whole, as a country.
It's amazing to me the societal pressures in family groups to conform, and even beyond the boundaries of reason and intellect, it's just shut up and do what you're told. I come from a family of liberals, even though my parents were highly conservative. So I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's very difficult at times because your heart goes out to not only your family, but your friends and to those around you. To have them really do a deep search of their values and why morality is important, why conservative values are important. What does the Constitution say? What does the Declaration of Independence say? Most people, especially in the Black community, and I find it in my family, they don't want to delve into those subjects because they've listened to so many of the leaders in the Black community criticize our founding documents, criticize the 1776 date of the founding of our country and try to move that back to the 1619 project date and just bastardize everything that America stands for because they're saying that none of that applies to the Black community, but that's not true. And I continually tell them all the time that the American dream, it's not copyrighted. It's not copyrighted to any one group of people, but it's for everyone. All you have to do is have the motivation and the desire to achieve and the motivation to work hard. And you may not have an equal outcome, but you have an equal opportunity to achieve a better outcome for yourself and for your family.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, if you look at the Black community, there are enough success stories, and there are a lot of them, to make you question at all whether there is any kind of a systemic attempt to keep any group down. I just don't see it.
You're absolutely correct. And that's all it takes is a good look around and also to ask questions and to bring out those success stories. I mean, especially when you look at sports, when you look at even now in the political realm, all of the different Blacks that are running for political office and they have won. And then when you consider why it is that communities that are predominantly held by Democrat Blacks are failing, and then compare those to the values that the Republicans that are Black and those of us who are in organizations such as Project 21 and other conservative organizations espouse, you have to wonder, why can't they see the truth and why don't they want to see the truth other than the fact that they followed the status quo and they subscribe to, like you said, the ideas and thoughts that racism is systemic and that they don't have any type of opportunity within themselves or within their community because of that systemic racism. But that just is totally false. It's not true. And America has made great strides as a nation in the realm of racism. And I think that all they have to do is step back and look at the strides that America has made. And it discounts everything that these subversive doctrines are espousing in the Black community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have to tell you that people who stand up and say what they think, regardless of the disdain that they know they're going to get, those people are my heroes because they're swimming against the stream and putting themselves at risk and doing it because it's right.
That is absolutely correct. I believe it is the right thing to do. I believe it is the God-given thing to do because he has given us the truth. Our government and our founding fathers has given us principles that have proven to be the truth. It has made America the greatest nation that has ever existed in the world. People from all around the world look to America for freedom, for liberty, for opportunities, and they strive to come here, and they achieve more so than even the minorities that are here, the blacks, you know, that are here in America. They tend to want to let the opportunity slide by because they're told to do so by those who call themselves their leaders. But at the same time, it would seem like the blacks in these communities would see that these leaders are neglecting them, that they're enriching themselves, and that they only care for themselves. Look at all the the money and the prosperity that has floated through the Congressional Black Caucus and other groups like the NAACP and the Urban League and Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Coalition. Money has funneled through those groups, and they've kept that money all to themselves. They've enriched themselves, but they haven't done one thing for the black community except say, unless you continue to follow me, you'll never achieve anything. But they dangled the carrot of achievement, but the people are never, ever able to catch that carrot and take a bite of it.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
Well, it's confusing to me that in our major Democratic-run cities, the quality of life keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And rather than vote for change, they just vote to continue it. And I always have to scratch my head and wonder why that is. I mean, the city of New York put Mayor Rudy Giuliani in as a Republican, and he changed that city entirely to a nice place. And then they went back to the Democrats.
Yep.
Yeah, that's very hard to understand. And I think one of the things that helps us understand it is because as blacks continue to look to the former leaders, those of the old school, they continue to make promises. And they continue to tell the people, you know, we're almost there. Hold on. We're going to get you there. And then the people in the community give up and say, OK, let's just wait on these people to take us to where we need to be. They're looking out for us. We don't need to do anything for ourselves, but we need to be led by this great Moses or whoever it is in the black community that has come in to rescue us. So they continue to follow the same old leaders with the same old promises who always promise everything will be taken care of if you just rely and depend upon what we tell you to do. And they continue to make the black community become more and more dependent. They lose more and more respect and dignity. So therefore, they end up in a situation that's a whole lot worse than what they were in from the beginning, because now you have generations of kids that are following in the footsteps of their parents who don't want to do anything except sit back and receive handouts from the government and become wards of the state.
Sad.
Well, you know, the Greek philosopher Plutarch said that the most dangerous man in society is he who gives away unearned benefits and gifts. And that's exactly what we've got going on, unearned benefits and gifts. Mm-hmm. And it's making people reliant upon those gifts.
Yeah, and so many people, too, will tell you within the black community, especially, you know, when you look into the inner cities, why should I work? Why should I do anything, you know, to better myself when I can just get it from my government? Mm-hmm. I can make more money by sitting at home, by having more kids. They're going to give it to us, and I want it.
Yep.
And it's easy street. And I try to tell people this all the time. I don't care if it's my relatives, it's my friends. If you sit back and you rely on the government, you will only ever have what the government wants you to have. And that's measly pennies. It's nothing compared to what you can earn. Sometimes I ask people, do you know how much an engineer makes? Do you know how much a nurse makes? Do you know how much someone else can make, or if you open your own business, what the possibilities would be. You know, you're going to be satisfied. And I've heard people tell me, well, I draw $900 a month from Social Security or from disability or from welfare, and man, that's good money. And I tell them, do you realize you could get a job driving an Amazon truck and make $45,000 to $50,000 a year? Right. I said, now you subtract, you add up the $900 a month and see what that comes out to per year. And then you get a job working for Amazon for $40,000 a year. And now tell me which is better.
Yep. Absolutely.
They have no clue.
Nope.
They have no clue. They just, all they can see is what they can get for the here and now. And they rely on the government to give that to them. And then they want to continue to rest and roost on those promises for the rest of their lives, never wanting to better themselves. Our children in our communities deserve better. They deserve an opportunity to better themselves and then make each generation thereafter better themselves. That's the American dream.
Yep.
Yeah, it is.
Now, for our listening audience, I have to introduce Emory. He is an American, first and foremost. He also happens to be black, but that's beyond, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It simply doesn't matter. This man is an American, proudly so, and we love to have him on the show.
Yep.
Now, Emory, you came to our attention through your response to the National Archives report on the racism of Washington, D.C.'s buildings. I find this kind of thinking beyond belief. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, the National Archives came up with a racial report. They called, you know, what they did was they did an investigation, and then they said that all of the archives, the buildings, the displays that are inside of their buildings had racial connotations to them, and people needed to be warned of those connotations and even perhaps have safe spaces in those places where they could vent. And also there should be maybe disclaimers placed on the artifacts, placed on the written documents or whatever, so that people can know that even down to racial slurs and pictures and everything would be, they're not what minorities need to see and hear. And it's, that's totally not true. And what we need to do is we need to learn our history of this country, regardless of whether it's good or bad. And we don't need to dwell on that and force people to see something that's in those documents, that's in those pictures, that's in those buildings. Especially they talk about the rotunda as you look up, mm-hmm. how racist it is. We don't need to reinforce those things and invent racism. But what we need to do is teach people that these things happen in this country, but look at the strides that have been made in this country after this went down. They fail to look at the people like Wilberforce. They fail to look at how they fought hard to end slavery. They want to place into people's minds in the National Archives that slavery is something that's ongoing and that can never be forgiven, that can never be erased from our minds. I don't think that's true, because I think that before the late 1990s, when Barack Obama became president, in the 2000s, when he became president, people weren't thinking about race. What they were thinking about was they were happy to have a man such as him become president, and they thought things would get better, and things were better up until the time that he began to sanction groups like Black Lives Matters and other groups mm-hmm. that were trying to espouse racism back into the Black community and into the United States. And that was a big mistake. There was a great opportunity for America to move on and continue to progress, but we took a giant leap backwards in racism.
Boy, is that the truth. No. And it seems to be going backwards at an increasing speed. I mean, if we look for a moment at sports in this country, the U.S. is a country that loves its sports. we give a high, perhaps undue respect to athletes.
Amen.
And yet there seems to be trouble brewing because many of those athletes are not returning the respect that we pay to them. And they're instead working to denigrate the country that idolizes them. Yeah. We've got Gwen Berry, Colin Kaepernick, LeBron James, the entire U.S. women's soccer team, the NBA, the NFL, and the list goes on.
Yeah, and the kneeling. The kneeling is what really gets me.
Yeah.
It's really sad because, especially in the Black community, your youth looks up with very high regard to the athletes. People like LeBron James, the Gwen Berrys, the Colin Kaepernicks, because for a long period of time, these were their heroes, like Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You know, all the great sports figures, were to be Dr. J, Jim Brown, because that was how you made it in the beginning. During the civil rights era and after the civil rights era, you could make it in sports because that was an open door. Later on, we begin to see other strides in the academic worlds, engineering, and, you know, and other political gains and so forth. Blacks getting into government, state government, governorships, mayorships, and so forth. But it's really it should be an honor for any person of color to serve as a participant,
ambassador.
Participant or ambassador to represent our country, the United States of America, the greatest country on earth, to show that, hey, because of who I am, I'm not held back, but I am able to represent this great country, and they should have pride in doing so, and they should exhibit that pride or not be on the team, in my estimation.
Totally agree. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, you know, this latest story with Gwen Berry, who, for those of you who don't know out in the audience, she came in third in the U.S. Olympic trials. So she made the team in the hammer throw. But she, when they played the national anthem, she turned away and hung her head and covered her head in a T-shirt. And she was embarrassed and angry. She said they played the national anthem out of spite just to get at her. Well, they play the national anthem at every medal ceremony. I'm not sure I understand her position. What she did was she took all the glory away from the lady who won it.
Both of them.
I have to tell you, there's only one person, one female in the history of humans who has thrown the hammer more than 80 meters. Only one woman's done it. And she did it at this meet. She threw it world record, and nobody knows who she is. Her name's been forgotten. We all remember Gwen.
Sad.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And it's really a shame that she did that. And, you know, it makes me wonder sometimes that the reason why a lot of these athletes, and sometimes, like you said, they're not the first place winners. They come in with the bronze or the silver medal, but they want to draw the attention away from the actual winner. Mm-hmm. And especially they use race to do so. Why couldn't Gwen look back at some of the great Black athletes that attended the Olympics in times past? Look at Jesse Owens. You know, he was proud. He saluted the flag. He talked about it afterwards, how proud he was to represent the United States of America, a country who Hitler thought would bring in people to run against his athletes and get smeared. But they came, they performed, and they won, and they were proud, and they didn't try to make a race issue out of it. What they did was they made an issue out of it that I represented the United States of America, my country. We defeated your athletes. We were happy to win. And that was the only focus that was placed on that. I think our athletes have a lot to learn today about history. I think they have a lot to learn today about respect, especially when it comes to respect for the American flag and for the Constitution and for who you represent. A display such as what Gwen did it brings out a bad reflection upon all of the Black community, not just upon her, because we see so much other thing, so many other things going on in the Black community, you know, regarding racism. And it's all always in the negative. We never get to see the positive. We need to see some of these positive influences and positive role models. And like you said, one person, Gwen, taking away the glory of someone who broke the world record and will never, ever know, you know, unless you do some deep research, what this person did through all of her hard work and effort.
We'd like to talk a bit about Joe Biden and race relations. I remember when I think of Joe Biden some years ago, I never would have put him into the category of being much of a friend to Black people. Yet Obama picked him as a vice president.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on our current president and his relationship with Black Americans?
Yeah, I've followed Joe Biden for a long time, even when he was a senator. I did even a representative, House of Representatives, and then a senator. I didn't follow him very much when he was in Delaware, but afterwards, when he started becoming popular and a big spokesman for the Democrat Party, I began to follow him, and I noticed a lot of different things related to racism coming out of his mouth, and I began to question him. And then the capstone of making me notice Joe Biden was during the Clarence Thomas nomination. And the things that he said to Clarence Thomas and some of the comments that he made surrounding that confirmation hearing. And I began to think, man, this guy is really off the rails. And I began to search a little bit more into Joe Biden and found out that he had made all kinds of statements about Black people. And he had done a lot of things during his political career that was very detrimental, not only toward Blacks, but other minorities also. He talked about people in convenience stores being Asian or
Indian.
I think it was an Indian or something like that from India. And just statement after statement, you can go back and find on Joe Biden. And then the capstone during this election was when he went on the radio broadcast with that dude who called himself the Christ or something like that. I forgot.
Yeah.
and he made the statement about, if you ain't, if you don't vote for me, you ain't Black enough.
Mm-hmm.
And on and on and on with some of this stuff. And then just recently, he steps up and talks about Black Lives Matters. He talks about the 1619 Project and the critical race theory, which is very dangerous and detrimental to our children and to our government agencies. And then he cancels all of the, in the criminal justice system, where he said he's not going to execute Black prisoners anymore because it's racist.
Yep.
That was my thought. But and it's just, wow. I mean, you know, what is he going to do next? And then all of a sudden, he wants to continue to give all these stipends and all these programs and pump them into the Black community so that they have no desire whatsoever to go back to work, no desire whatsoever to depend upon their ingenuity, their hard work, and get back into society, even after this terrible thing that happened with our economy during the COVID shutdown. So what he's doing then is he's belittling the Black community. He's making all kinds of statements that are belittling to the Black community, and he's not apologizing for any of it.
That's true.
Absolutely right. Who can forget during the first debate when Kamala Harris absolutely raked him over the coals for being a racist?
That little girl was me. I remember that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. And I was going to bring that up, and I'm glad you brought that up. And then he turns around and chooses her as his vice president. That was a really enigma for I guess a lot of people in the Black community. But of course, they didn't look at it that way. You know, some of my friends and my family, they looked at it as, well, he's putting another minority in, and that's okay. But they completely forgot about all of the derogatory statements and how they were infighting with one another over racism, Biden and Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. So it's really something. I just, the Biden administration
is doing more now to destroy the Black community than even the Obama administration did.
Wow. And Emory, word on the street now, I just heard recently in the news that Kamala and our President Biden are not really getting along too good right now. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that is a rumor, and it's probably true.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, I don't think they really had a good, happy relationship from the get-go. And I know Kamala had other ambitions. She wanted to be at the top of the ticket. And I know she probably finds it hard right now to work with Joe Biden because of all the blunders and things that he's making, not only in the White House, but on the road as he goes out and makes speeches. Mm-hmm. And then some of the things that he's saying to the Black community. Kamala herself, I don't know, a lot of Black people, especially from California, they don't really care that much for Kamala Harris. However, I think that they would prefer her to come out and try to do things for them than they would to have Joe Biden, because right now I don't think they really trust Joe Biden. And I think a lot of eyes are being open to the wrongs that he has been doing and is doing. And they're really driving a stake into their own heart through having Mr. Biden continue on with his blunders and with the racism that he's bringing forth, in the nation right now. I think I'm kind of glad he's doing it as a conservative, because I think that I'm getting a lot of responses from the Black community that, what in the world is going on with Biden? Mm-hmm. And then I tell him, I said, you didn't like a tweet. You didn't like bold statements and the slogan that Mr. Trump had, that let's keep America first. Let's make America great again. But now all of a sudden you have someone that's acting like an imbecile and acting like they are they're having mental problems. Mm-hmm. You don't like that, but you still back him, even though he has made all kinds of derogatory statements toward those in the community. What's up with that?
Yeah.
So I haven't been able to get a good, honest answer yet.
Yeah.
All they can tell me is that he doesn't need to be there, and they wished he would get out and they put Kamala in.
Oh, my.
Wow. Well, that would be an uproarious change. A lot of people in this country would be very unhappy on both sides.
You got it.
Yep, yeah, that's true.
Because I don't think it would be any better, because some of her ideas are even more radical than Joe Biden's.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. We see more and more conservative Blacks running for office. Tim Scott is a marvelous human being. That lieutenant governor up in North Carolina is...
Yeah, Mark Robinson.
He's a powerful speaker.
Yeah, I know Mark. We used to do tea parties together around the country. And also I've had breakfast with, actually luncheon in the House of Representatives dining room with Tim Scott when Marlon Stutzman from Indiana was my congressman. He got us together. And I'm telling you... And I've been down to South Carolina, and I've done some speeches down there and had an opportunity to hear and see Tim Scott and the statements that he made, especially after the State of the Union. And also when he came up with these ideas about how to make the Black community better, he should have a lot more respect. But because of the liberal viewpoint and the bashing, he's not treated as he should be.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Conservative Thought Hour. Rick Stannard along with Carrie Black, and we're so thankful for you listening. We're here every Saturday morning from 9 a.m. until 10 on WENG. Our guest this morning is Emory McClendon. Emory is a member of the Project 21 National Advisory Council, a Tea Party organizer, hails from Fort Wayne, Indiana, and he is the winner of Americans for Prosperity's 2010 Activist of the Year Award. Emory, where can our listeners find out more about you?
They can find me on Twitter. I'm listed under my ham radio call on Twitter, which is KB9IBW. I'm also on Facebook as Emory MC.
And I do a lot of writing and media appearances for Project 21 and also for Tea Party Patriots, which is a national organization. I'm the Indiana State coordinator, and I've been with them since the Tea Party began way back in the first Tea Parties back in 2008, I think it was, 2009. So I've been around a while, and I also do a lot of articles for the organization called Politichick. So if you go on politichicks.com, you'll find scores of articles that I've written for them.
Fabulous. Yeah. Emory, I want to take you back to Lyndon Johnson's presidency, because a lot of people believe that that was the beginning of a lot of difficulties for the Black community. He created something called the Great Society, and he literally, in trying to help the Black community, I think he literally put them in jail by hamstringing their ability to look out after themselves. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with you totally and wholeheartedly. And I think that I and most conservatives, and even some people that are not conservatives, look at it as not him trying to help, but also him trying to hinder and steer Black people in that direction. Because that's when the welfare system became more and more aggressive in the Black community. And they were encouraging women even more so to have more and more kids, to kick the male figure out of the household. You also had the rumors and even the video, not videotapes, but audio tapes surface of Lyndon Johnson making all kinds of derogatory statements about Blacks. He was reluctant to sign the Civil Rights Bill, even at the encouragement of Martin Luther King and having many, many conversations with him, them going back and forth. He was only forced to do so because he knew that it would destroy his presidency if he hadn't. And we also know that the Democrat Party was not responsible, and nor was Lyndon Johnson, for the 1960s Civil Rights Act being passed, but it was Republicans. And that's a fact that a lot of Black people don't know and don't understand, because they're taught the complete opposite. And they also are not taught that people like Bull Connor, George Wallace, and others down in the Deep South were Democrats. I don't know how in the world these facts escape, but they're all related to the Democratic Party. And the truth of that needs to come out. And the truth about Lyndon Johnson needs to come out, because he caused a lot of problems within the Black community. And especially he hurt a lot of the churches and with the Johnson Amendment that came out, even though it's not enforced, you know, as completely in the Black church as it is in the other churches, as far as stifling their speech based on their status as a 501c3. But Johnson was also behind a lot of that also.
Absolutely. All right, so we come back to modern day, and there's a wonderful young lady named Candace Owens who's working her tail off on a project she calls Legxit. How is that working? Is that gaining any traction?
Yeah, the Candace Owens organization, Blexit, is a fine organization. Mm-hmm. I failed to mention that, but I'm part of that also.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I've got a call about a couple weeks ago from one of the Blexit leaders. They want me to get more involved with the state of Indiana.
Right.
And I had been asked before, and I went to the Blexit march that we had in Washington, D.C. I correspond, and I also submit a lot of my tweets, my articles to Blexit National and some of the other chapters around the country. And I keep current with making statements and so forth from the Blexit Indiana page. And Candace is right on track as far as trying to help Black people see and understand their plight and how they're being manipulated. And I applaud her for what she's doing in that regards. Mm-hmm. And we need to pay more attention to the truth in the Black community
And I wish that Blacks had all the success in the world. They are holding community events just here in Indiana and in Maryland, Virginia. I'm aware of some of the leaders around the country and what they're doing as far as holding like picnics and voter registration drives, you know, different things like that to kind of inform Black people and let them know that, hey, this is a principle that will work for you. These are concepts that will help not only better the Black community, but help better your grandchildren and their children as they move into the future. So I'm happy to see organizations such as that come into being. And also I'm really pleased too about the 1776 Project and the work that Mark Keith Robinson is doing with that, and also some of the others. And I'm also glad that Dr. Ben Carson is speaking up on behalf of a lot of these different organizations too.
Yep. Absolutely true. Well, there was a bet between on television on Fox News between Candace and I think it might have been Leo version 1.0, Leo Terrell.
Yep.
Oh yeah, Leo Terrell.
Before his conversion to conservatism, which I have to tell you is a wonderful surprise, because he was so virulently left for so many years. But there was a bet between Candace and Leo about the success that she was going to have on Blexit and bringing the black community to conservatism. Did they ever settle their bet, do you know?
I'm not sure about that or not, but I do know that Leo Terrell has become a very outspoken person, and he's positive, and we're seeing a lot of good information come from him and his camp. Candace is continuing to warn and to let people know that, hey, you don't have to be stifled. You don't have to be ashamed of who and what you are. But that organization, the Blexit, is growing. Indiana chapter is growing. The other chapters growing all around the country. I even got an email from Blexit Alaska, and I said, Blexit Alaska? I didn't even know there was that many Black people in Alaska.
Oh, wow.
So they are growing up in Alaska. So I'm happy to see the organization growing. I'm happy to see that so many Blacks are joining the movement. And I hope sincerely that the bet will be settled, and that we'll also see more and more progress in the Black community, and projects like the Project 21 and other organizations will be able to continue to get the word out. I'm really happy from the time that I started. And I've been a very staunch, outspoken conservative ever since the days of Reagan. And I remember when I stood alone in my community and mostly around the nation. When I first joined Tea Party Patriots and Project 21, there were very few Blacks. Now there are hundreds of us, and we're standing arm in arm, and we are bringing in more and more Blacks all around the country. And we're beginning to get more and more opportunities to appear on media outlets, write editorials, op-eds, and people are listening now like they've never listened before.
Well, yes. Emory, I have to tell you that we're standing there right with you.
Yeah, amen.
We are proud of what you're doing.
Yes. Emory, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you, and I really appreciate it, and I hope that the listeners learn something, and I hope that they will continue to search and look for ways to better this country, because it's going to take us all. When Khrushchev said that he's coming after you, it didn't mean a certain race of people, but that you means every American. And we must protect our country and continue to grow and be the country that our founders wanted us to be.
Absolutely. Thank you, Emory McClendon, for being our guest today.
Thank you.